So my Uber driver was a sage. He was taking me back to the Toronto airport after my incredible experiences in Canada at the Parliament of World Religions last November. We were talking religion and philosophy, and he suddenly shared with me, "Take a step back. The sky is wider." It was the Chinese proverb that perfectly reflected my journey. Take a step back. The sky is wider. Sometimes you have to step back out of your day-to-day life to gain perspective and see things more clearly, don't you? So the Parliament gathered around 8,000 participants from over 80 different nations around the world in Toronto, Canada. And during the opening ceremony, Ahmed Hussein, Canada's Minister of Immigration, Refugees and Citizenship, himself a refugee from Somalia who came to Canada when he was 16, said that in Canada, they welcome diversity. They don't only tolerate or accept diversity, they actively invite it. They celebrate it and find themselves enriched by it as a country. Indeed, he said that Toronto is recognized by the UN as the world's most diverse city. Yeah, my taxi driver, who had immigrated from China when he was 12 years old, told me proudly that Toronto was 53% immigrants. When I'd arrived in Toronto barely a week before, that Uber driver was another wonderful man who'd emigrated from Pakistan. Both drivers were so grateful for the life and the welcome that Canada gave them. In fact, so many of the people we met, from the very helpful Korean concierge at the hotel, to the Muslim policeman, to the Sikhs welcoming us to the parliament, all had some story of how Canada had opened its arms to them, embraced and included them. And people seemed to be living harmoniously with their differences. Canada, in fact, calls itself a delicious salad bowl of cultures. My reality felt suddenly transformed. I'd arrived the same day that the US president declared he'd send 15,000 troops to the Mexican border to keep asylum seekers out of the US and separate children and families. What a contrast in cultures. Despite the Canadian and US proximity and our surface commonalities, I soon began to realize I was in a completely different land. Now, Canada is still a place where politicians attending the parliament told us that inclusion is valued above exclusion, that love is valued over hatred, that our common humanity matters, and welcome is religiously practiced. Diversity is considered a strength as opposed to a weakness or a threat. Honestly, I almost wanted to cry. The contrast made this place feel like Shangri-La. I could feel my whole body unwind as I settled into my week at the Parliament. And I didn't realize the extent of my fatigue and stress from living under the daily threats that we live here, the reactivity, the anger, and the hatred in our country from the highest levels. I literally felt like I was on a different planet, a strange place where people respect each other across difference and are curious rather than suspicious of one another. We were promised that at this week at the Parliament, with over 220 different religions represented, that we could focus on leaving hatred and otherness behind, to have an experience of our common humanity and shared values. The goal was to use religion as a way of uniting people rather than dividing them, of bridging the chasm that separates so many of us. And in fact, the Parliament's theme for this week was the promise of inclusion, the power of love, pursuing global understanding, reconciliation, and change. I realized then why the Parliament is so important in evolving our human dialogue. It brings people together who've traditionally, historically disagreed and looked at one another with suspicion. It brings people together who in many parts of the world fight and kill one another. It brings people together with saris and turbans, hijabs, saffron robes, yarmulkes, collars, indigenous vestments and monks' habits, brushing up against each other in elevators and crowded conference rooms for a week. It brings people together across differences in culture, race, and language to get to know one another as human beings and realize our common humanity. It brings people together from different theologies and beliefs to uncover their shared interest in caring for humankind and to realize that our religions are more alike than different. It's really a most unusual experience, and one I recommend you try sometime. All these nations and religions under one roof for a week in close proximity, with people getting to know each other and forming connections in small conference rooms. We rarely get such an opportunity to come out of our own echo chambers and be in the midst of such diversity and pluralism. It reminds me of our reading that Ayana read earlier. I'm tired of being alone on my side of the chasm. I'm using so much energy fearing and resisting you. Instead, it helped us to crack the dogma, to peel away the mythology and trade memories. It reminded us that we're all just human, walking our particular journey through life. We're all more similar than we often think. Now, as some of you know, the Parliament was the fulfillment of a long ago prophecy among the indigenous community that one day leaders from spiritual and faith traditions around the world would gather with them to work for peace and the protection of Mother Earth. Pretty cool, eh? The first Parliament actually took place in 1893 in Chicago as part of the World's Fair and lasted 17 days. Nobody wanted to return home. It was a groundbreaking opportunity to crack the dogma, to peel away the mythology and trade memories. This inaugural Parliament was attended by about 7,000 people. Remember, travel was a lot harder in those days, and was led by some of our Unitarian Universalist foremothers and forefathers, Julia Ward Howe, Susan B. Anthony, Augusta Jane Chapin, and Jenkin Lloyd Jones, among others. The young Hindu monk Swami Vivekananda gave the keynote speech, introducing Eastern religion to the West and warning against sectarianism and bigotry. Today, the Parliament is considered to have been the birthplace of the global interfaith movement and interreligious dialogue. And sadly, for reasons I don't entirely understand, the Parliament didn't take place for another 100 years after that inaugural Parliament. When it reconvened in 1993 in Chicago, His Holiness the Dalai Lama and other religious leaders came to find ethical common ground, to create a United Nations of religions and thereby develop the interfaith movement. Since then, the Parliament has taken place another six times. In 1999 in Cape Town, Nelson Mandela and Desmond Tutu worked on creating a new South Africa with the help of religious leaders. In 2004 in Barcelona, the Assembled Parliament, together with UNESCO, started a Pathways to Peace movement to face growing global fear and violence. And then in 2009 in Melbourne, Australia, President Jimmy Carter and Aboriginal groups, among others, collaborated towards creating a healthy and sustainable world. Powerfully, that Parliament became the place where the Australian government issued a national apology to the Aboriginal people of Australia. And then in 2015, we met in the Mormon bastion of Salt Lake City, focusing on elevating the status and worth of women in world religions. The Parliament has, in fact, been the birthplace of much change healing, social change, and new movements. So as the week unfolded at the Toronto Parliament, we found that despite our distinct and unique religious journeys, we shared a desire for compassion and for dignity and respect, a mutual quest to explore the mystery of existence, a communal love for caring community, a joint passion to serve the poor, the marginalized, and the oppressed. It was a welcome antidote to the hostility, the suspicion, the nationalism, and fear that pervades so much of our world right now. It was holy medicine for our aching souls. A Sikh leader shared with us that the Sikhs pray several times a day for the well-being of the entire world. Despite their people having been massacred throughout time, Sikhs promote that the theology that their theology that there is no other. We're all interconnected. It's not about me and it's not about you. This life, this existence is about us, about all of us. Does that sound familiar to any of you? Remember when 2 weeks ago we talked about the power of we as opposed to I? That is the essence of the Sikh religion and also what we're aiming for as Unitarian Universalists. Sikhs have a unique way of putting their beliefs into action. Every day they fed the entire parliament community, 8,000 people, a free lunch called langar. In fact, part of their spiritual practice has been to offer free lunches all around the world every day to people in need. You see, there is no such thing. There is actually such a thing as a free lunch when you look upon the world with love. So a Zoroastrian, which is a hard word to pronounce, isn't it? A Zoroastrian Iranian emigre shared with us the principles of the ancient Zoroastrian religion. Very simply, they are, as you heard in our story earlier, good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. Once again, you could say the same about our Unitarian Universalist faith, couldn't you? Good thoughts, we work so hard at that. Good words, have integrity in our speech. And good deeds, put our thoughts and words into action. It helps me realize that despite our different religious journeys, we all have more in common than we do dividing us. We're all human beings trying to make meaning out of this life. And as spiritual people, most of us strive to be as kind and caring as we can. I also realize that interfaith dialogue, reaching across the aisle beyond beliefs to a place of shared values and actions, is exactly what we do in Unitarian Universalism, isn't it? In fact, there were many occasions when people told me they wanted to leave the exclusivity of their own religion, that they were tired that either women or the LGBTQ population weren't respected, as we've just witnessed with our Methodist friends, that they wanted to start a new religion that was more inclusive to all. And I said, stop, stop. I told them with pride that a religion of that like that already exists in the form of Unitarian Universalism. And it was just sad that we didn't have a Unitarian Universalist booth at the Parliament. So many other religions were represented and were enthusiastically sharing their faith with others, from Jains to Baha'is to the New Thought movement. But although the UU United Nations Office and the International Council of Unitarians, as well as the Canadian Unitarian Council, were represented, our faith as a religious movement was not. There was nowhere people could go to learn about or understand what Unitarian Universalism was. And this reminded me of my biggest frustration with our faith. So few people know about us. It's a shame because we really have something very special to offer. We could be doing so much more to get our message and name out there. What we offer was what so many at the Parliament were hungering for. And I yearned for a larger platform for us to share Unitarian Universalism, as there were hundreds, if not thousands, of people who would have been interested. It was a missed opportunity, and one that I had a chance to speak to our UUA president, Reverend Susan Frederick Gray, about afterwards. It moved me deeply that every session, every plenary and meeting was begun with a specific ritual, an acknowledgement and gratitude to the First Nations, the Native North Americans, whose land we were meeting on. In fact, Canada honors its First Peoples in a much more respectful way than the US. Canadians are actively promoting and encouraging leadership by the First Nations throughout government and institutions. And also, each First Nations person is exempt from most Canadian taxes as a government symbol of reconciliation and reparations for having conquered and taken their lands. There was a real sense of respecting and working together with the First Peoples nations and trying to make amends for past hurts as opposed to continuing to oppress and relegate them. It was inspiring. And the Parliament began just a few days after the tragic shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. During the Parliament, clergy from all faiths, organized and led by Muslims, chose to protectively surround all the synagogues in Toronto during Shabbat. And they did so with a ring of prayer, songs, and a call for safety. Likewise, when a mosque was viciously attacked in Quebec a few years earlier, rabbis and Jewish leaders gathered together to surround all the mosques in the area with love and a ring of protection. We all came together at that parliament. I can't tell you what a powerful, life-changing experience that was. We all came together against hate and the suppression of religious freedom. The Parliament also reminded us that as religious people, our role is to be leaders of vision and values, just like our mission statement is here. There's no place for hatred, jealousy, and violence in a civilized world. As religious people, we are called to be leaders of fundamental change in the service of love. And we can't do that alone. As the quote in your order of service by the Dalai Lama says, forming a new world religion is difficult and not particularly desirable. However, in that love is essential to all religions, one could speak of the universal religion of love. If we embrace our common humanity and work to be more loving, we become stronger and more effective than our individual faith traditions. And then we truly embody the teachings of Jesus, of Muhammad, blessed be his name, of the Buddha, of Baha'u'llah, of Krishna, and other great prophets, philosophers, and teachers. I believe they want us to know that we are more alike than different. We're all interconnected. None of us has the only answer. None of us is right alone, believe it or not. But I believe we're on this earth to collectively further love, understanding, peace, and hope. Will you join me in furthering such a message?
Yeah.
Love, understanding, peace, and hope. Interfaith dialogue and religious values are essential for that, to remind us of our highest selves and our common desire for hope and peace, to remind us to counter anger, suspicion, and hate, to remind us to take on the false religion of free market capitalism that exploits the earth and divides people between rich and poor, to remind us to serve the cause of love. We must find a way, my friends, to act from love, even in the face of hate, to act from love. But how? It sounds easy, doesn't it? But how do we actually act from love? Isn't that just a lofty ideal that doesn't really have much meaning? How can we love those who spread hatred and fear? Love is lived, my friends, by being curious instead of judgmental. Love is lived by being inclusive instead of othering. Love is lived by being compassionate instead of dismissive. Love is lived by listening instead of reacting. Love is lived by serving rather than taking. Love is lived by seeking above all to understand one another, not by being righteous about our opinions and ways. Listening and understanding teaches us to respect our differences and open our hearts to our shared journey of growing love in this divided world. As Unitarian Universalists, the core of our theology is that we do not need to think alike to love alike, right? Or even we do not need to believe alike to love alike. This is how love is lived. We cannot let the forces of hate divide and conquer love. If we stand united in love, always returning to love, persisting with love, love will never fall. So in this difficult time when hate and bigoted populism seek to divide and turn us against one another, we need to create new habits of persistence, resilience, and resistance. Persistence, resistance, and resilience. So many people who spoke at the Parliament had experienced horrific things, from gang rape to murder to genocide. There was a man who lost his three daughters to a bomb in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, yet he was there speaking of the importance of forgiveness. Can you imagine? He was there persisting for peace. He was there advocating for love despite his three daughters being murdered. He resisted succumbing to hate. If he can do it, can't we do it, my friends? Mm-hmm. It's hard. But we need resilience now more than ever and a deep commitment to keep returning to love. These difficult times may take a long time to work through, and there's unlikely to be a quick fix. Our spiritual challenge as Unitarian Universalists is to keep loving, to keep persisting, resisting, and being resilient, to keep loving each other and those who don't agree with us. We're all human beings, after all, seeking our way through this journey of life. Our reading earlier finished with, maybe if you ask how things look to you, between us we'll see something we never saw before. My friends, may we continue to listen and ask each other. Ask each other, in this naming process too, ask each other, how do things look to you? Love is lived. Say it with me. Love is lived. May we remind each other that love is lived. Let us live that love and reach across difference. Let us live that love and find our commonalities. Let us live that love by bringing more understanding and peace to unite this divided, hurting world. It begins with you, and it begins with me. May we all live that love.